seachtain an Indo-Ascaliger.
Táim I mon iarachtaí a dhéanamh teacht ar a chur, agus súlagam amach an seo gur féidir é a chur in uaig ceart lena bhaintir féin.
Scíltaí, fios, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreite nach bhféadfach ara i gcuirna meáin an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam a gnám go raibh orthcháir in reachtam. Iadach sé tarann go raibh an orthcháir san i lis dúthail agus go mina fnacht gáir a chlig sár ducha sin éair. Ná ní bhíon ann tar d'oraach sé sin. Vin Marav.
Shachtan. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
Your way to work could sound like this. Or it could sound like...
Poet, punk, performer extraordinaire, the great Shane McGowan has left us.
Hardly a week goes by these days without a story about artificial intelligence making the news.
With war raging in the Middle East and Europe, have we been turning a blind eye all along?
Mute your commute with the Indo Daily Podcast. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
And there was this rumour that had gone around from a fella in a pub who claimed that his daughter had been murdered in the north by a stray rubber bullet and he was out to avenge her death.
Today on the Indo Daily, revenge plots, elaborate conspiracies, and the new FBI files on assassinating the Queen. 40 years ago, the power ballad of the decade was number one. We were flocking to see Return of the Jedi.
Return to a galaxy far, far away.
And the must-have toy was the Cabbage Patch Kids.
Cabbage Patch Kids, you can give them all your love.
1983 was also the year when Hollywood met royalty as President Ronald Reagan hosted Queen Elizabeth II in California.
We are very grateful for your charming hospitality and for the generous reception we have had everywhere since our arrival in California.
However, now it turns out there was a plot by Republicans to assassinate the Queen while she was in the US, driven by revenge for the Troubles. I'm Fionnán Sheehan, and today on the Indo Daily, I'm joined by Sinead Ryan, Irish Independent columnist and royal expert, to look at the multiple attempts to remove the royal family from the Queen to King Charles. Sinead, we're learning 40 years later about an assassination plot against the Queen by Republicans in the United States. Where's all this coming from?
Well, it came from a release of a bunch of files from the FBI, of all sources, who had uncovered this plot to assassinate the Queen, one of many during her lifetime, it has to be said. But it was at a time when tensions were heightened and it was quite credible. It was considered to be so. And I suppose, Fionnán, we're all used to like state papers being released years and years and years after events for political matters here and in the UK. But the FBI decided to drop this because the Queen is now died of natural causes, we hasten to add, and therefore they feel that, you know, this information can be released. So it came as quite a surprise that they had such detail on it and that we know about it because it wasn't known before.
Now, before we get into the detail, take us back to the period of time we're talking about, early 80s, 70s and 80s, dominated by the Troubles in terms of UK-Irish relations. Talk us through that period and particularly the involvement of the royal family.
Yeah, so this was probably the height of the Troubles. I mean, Bloody Sunday had happened in 1972. There had been hundreds of murders on both sides over the years, really since the 60s, as we all know. And I suppose in terms of the royal family and plots against them, that reached its height in 1979 when the Queen's cousin, Lord Mountbatten, was murdered in Mullaghmore in Sligo, where he visited his family home, Cleisbourne Castle.
A day of tragic violence in Ireland. Lord Mountbatten of Bemmer has been killed by an explosion on his yacht off the Republic's coast. The Provisional IRA have already said they killed Lord Mountbatten.
he wasn't a member of the royal family in the sense that he wasn't, you know, part of the family, he wasn't in the line of succession, but he was so loved by them and he was such a close mentor. It was he who got Prince Philip to meet the Queen and maybe become her husband. There was a great deal of kind of behind the scenes manipulation of that relationship, which was a love match. And also he acted as a mentor to the young Prince Charles, where his own father, possibly lacking in those particular skills, Mountbatten took him under his wing and he was utterly devastated by the loss of Mountbatten. It was a shocking thing to have happened.
Now, take us forward then to 1983, and Queen Elizabeth II is visiting the United States. So this was an important visit.
It was a sight that neither the grey skies nor the sprinkling rain could ruin. Her Majesty's yacht making a grand entrance into San Diego Harbor. This was no ordinary crowd. All were invited to catch a glimpse of the royal couple. The royal crew in proper step took its proper place. And in punctual British fashion, Her Majesty emerged.
It was an important visit politically, for sure. So the royal family have always made visits to the US and always received American presidents back at home. So it does underline that very close relationship. Aside from that, it was well known that Reagan was probably her favourite American president throughout the years. Now, she'd never say that publicly, but they shared a love of horses. Reagan, of course, had been in the movies. He was a very accomplished horse rider, as was the Queen herself. So she loved his company. He was easy. He was relaxed. He was a showman and she really enjoyed. So this was a visit she was looking forward to politically and professionally.
And ladies and gentlemen, happily and conscious of the honor that is ours tonight, I ask you to join me in a toast to Her Majesty the Queen. To the Queen.
Tell us then what the documents from the FBI are telling us, particularly around that visit to Reagan's home state of California.
The FBI were alerted. Now, whenever they have a visiting dignitary, they'll apply a Secret Service detail to them. And of course, everything gets battened down and checked and double checked and all that. And there was this rumour that had gone around, you know, from a fella in a pub who claimed that his daughter had been murdered in the north by a stray rubber bullet and he was out to avenge her death. And an FBI agent got wind of this plot, which seemed to be quite specific. Now, there were two options. The first was that he would stand on the Golden Gate Bridge because she was due to tour part of California, and he would drop a bomb onto the royal yacht as it passed underneath the Golden Gate Bridge. Then he was going to head out to Yosemite National Park, where she was also going to pay a visit, and try and maybe have a pot shot at her there.
They did take precautions.
They did. Well, they have to, because, I mean, you can't have something like that happening on their watch, even an attempt. So they closed off the bridge so that this would be kind of arsonist or bomber wouldn't be able to cross it. So she went ahead with the visit, very anxious to fulfil her obligations, and they headed out to Yosemite, fulfilled the whole package really, and safely she got home, and we didn't hear anything about it until this cache of documents was dropped by the FBI.
There was one incident on that trip that did actually result in the deaths of a number of Secret Service agents. Tell us about that.
Well, when she was heading over to this visit, she was given a Secret Service detail which would follow behind her official car. And these would be armed FBI Secret Service agents. And they were coming around the bend of one of the roads. And California is notorious for its windy roads. And there was a head-on collision and the agents were killed. So it was very, very tragic. Now, it didn't take long for some of the conspiracy theories to abound by that. You know, we've seen them before and since when it comes to car crashes and all kinds of things. But in fact, it was just a tragic accident. But it did overshadow the visit. It did mar it. And, you know, it certainly would put a dampener on it, even in terms of Reagan, because he had to come out and make a statement. And, you know, it was unfortunate. But that seems to have been all it was.
A bit of conspiracy theory there. You mentioned her love of horses. She's going to the Kentucky Derby, and this was seen as a weak point in the security.
A lover of horse racing and thoroughbred owner herself, the Queen came to the Commonwealth several times, including a visit in 1986.
She was mostly out with the horses. She didn't have to leave Lexington, and for her to come to Goshen, Kentucky, 70 miles west of Versailles and the traditional bluegrass, that was quite an honor.
It was. Now, this was about 1989. The Queen visited the Kentucky Derby many times. She had private visits now, so they wouldn't necessarily have been publicised with public photographs. She loved horses. She loved the training and race horses. And this is a well-known place for breeding. And on the 89 visit, agents got wind of the fact that there was a plot maybe to do her harm or to cause embarrassment even, which would have been pretty bad, by the IRA and by local members. And the detail at the time, or the warning, went out to be on a high alert for anybody who shouldn't be there. So that was something that came up in an FBI memo. But it was just to underline this idea that that remained a threat all the way along. So you're talking about from the 1760s, really, right up to probably the signing of the Good Friday Agreement, where there were constant threats and worries and concerns, because the Queen was the ultimate high profile figure. Getting rid of her, making a statement by harming her in any way, would have been a massive statement, a coup, presumably, for the IRA.
We're heading in then to the early 90s. The troubles are still underway. And again, the Queen back on a visit to the United States. Different president, the older George Bush at this point.
Yeah.
We're at a baseball game. And what was happening there?
Here comes the Queen to the ballpark across 33rd Street. This was shot about 10, 15 minutes ago as she pulls into the main area of the parking lot right in the front of the ball.
The FBI got a Secret Service alert that Irish groups, that was their term for it, were planning protests at the stadium. Now, there didn't seem to be any indication that they would use a weapon or a bomb or anything like that, but they had bought up a whole chunk of tickets for the match. So the likelihood was that it was going to be a visual protest, maybe whipping off their shirts and wearing anti-British slogans or something like that. Something that would have got maximum press. Very embarrassing to the Queen. Very embarrassing to Bush, of course, it has to be said, because it would look like they couldn't police the thing. And they did take precautions against that.
During this period, there are a lot of conspiracy theories playing out amongst but externally and internally to the royal family. Tell me about Prince Charles and the enemies within.
Look, plots have always taken place or been alleged to take place in royal circles for the last, thousand years, because that's how long they've been in existence. So, I mean, you can go back right back to Tudor times. Henry VIII got his gig because of plotting. So all the way along there have been plots. But one notable one, which was hotly denied, was around the time when Diana and Charles had broken up.
They sold a lot of newspapers in Britain today, and they all had the same story, the divorce.
The royal family's in the olden days, aren't they? Getting divorced.
Their children must be having a bloody awful time of it, and forgive me for swearing, but I think they need to sort themselves out.
William, as you remember, the next in line after Charles, was quite young. He was only a teenager or younger before Diana's death. There seemed to have been some kind of a conversation, a discussion, a plot, if you want to call it that, between Diana, Prince Andrew, and his wife, the Duchess of York, Sarah Ferguson. And the plan seemed to have surrounded about the dissatisfaction about the fact that Charles and Diana were divorcing, separating, and it was clearly known then he was in love with Camilla, always had been, and was possibly planning on marrying her and having her on the throne at some point in the future. And Diana didn't obviously want this to happen, and her sense of it was that she thought the crown should pass to her son, William, who then was only a child. So in order to facilitate this, there seemed to have been a conversation about Andrew, Prince Andrew, who would have been the next in line should something have happened to Charles, to become a regent. Now, a regent is where you step in to become the ruler until the next in line is of age. So between then and when William was 18, Andrew would come in. And of course, this would shore up maybe his position. We always know he was kind of the disaffected second son, but also his wife's and indeed Diana's, because she'd have a lot of control and they would effectively run the monarchy. There are suggestions. Angela Levin, a biographer, well-known biographer, wrote a book on this, that they went to the Queen and the Archbishop of Canterbury to try and get their, you know, agreement for this, both of whom, it has to be said, took the sensible line and said, no, that's not going to happen.
But not entirely far-fetched in that King Edward had to abdicate.
Yes.
Because he wanted to marry a divorcee, mm-hmm. Wallace Simpson. And effectively, Charles was going to be kind of in the same scenario. He was going to be divorcing Diana and marrying a divorcee in Camilla. So at that time, it wasn't plausible that he could actually become king by going down that
route. No, indeed. I mean, in those days, and it seems strange because you're only talking about 25 years ago, but there was real opposition, political opposition, to Charles marrying Camilla or divorcing Diana. Huge opposition. And John Major was the Prime Minister at the time. And it was deemed, Charles, the King, the Queen, is head of the Church of England. And of course, this was not permitted by them. He was supposed to be setting an example. And at that stage, everybody knew what had gone on, and sympathy had firmly come down on Diana's side. Charles was not well liked. And you have to remember, around that time, we're talking about the late 70s, early 80s, Britain was in a parlous state economically. There were riots on the street, there were strikes. You know, there was a republican movement really growing, but it was very much thought that Diana and Charles's marriage would scupper all that because it would bring out a sense of nationalism and royalist sentiment. And it did. So there were records, you know, Diana saved the monarchy kind of talk about it. So to suddenly have her ditched for this other woman didn't go down well with the public. So there was definitely an opposition to that. And even after Diana died, and that is partly why all the conspiracy theories started, because Diana dying was the only convenient way that Charles could have his way. So you can understand where that all came from. So this sentiment was there. Real, not real. It was definitely a strong feeling. It seems silly now, but it was very, very strong then.
You mentioned Diana and conspiracy theories, and Geoffrey Archer, a great man for them, in his day job as a novelist. His latest plotline has got the assassination of Diana at the heart of it.
He wrote a book last year called Next in Line, and it was about a plot to kill Diana by sending in rogue Navy SEALs or elements that had been turned to set a bomb on a boat that she was on. So listen, I mean,
Navy SEALs, look, as in the soldiers, not the animals. Yeah,
indeed. Yeah. I read it last year. It was a remarkably forgettable book, but it seems to have been surrounded. And of course, the day was saved and nothing happened. But it just shows you that people can't get enough of the conspiracy theories. I mean, there were three inquiries and over £1 million spent on the inquiry into Diana's death. You know, there are still documentaries being made about it. There are still films being made about it. There are still episodes of The Crown to come out about it. It just shows you the ongoing fascination with what people want to believe. And you have to, I suppose, partly look at the royal family nowadays, rogue elements within, like Harry and Meghan, I'm looking at you, notwithstanding, that people love the celebrity of this. They just see them as a big, massive Kardashian on speed kind of thing. I don't see that abating anytime soon.
And my thanks to Sinead Ryan. I'm Fionnán Sheehan, and today's episode was produced by Gareth Mulhall, researched by Saoirse Mulgrew, with sound by Gavin Hennessy. Archive clips from the Reagan Foundation, WHAS-TV, MLB, Fox 11, CBS 8, LA City Clark, the BBC, CNN and Independent.ie. If you enjoy the Indo Daily, don't forget to like, follow and leave us a review.